Football Weekly Extra.
Near Earth Orbit's number one football roundup, Football Weekly Extra. Today, Paul Ince, unlike George Bush in the press conference, couldn't duck the boot. Now with Rovers in a dogfight, can Big Sam retrieve the situation? Elsewhere, there's the latest on those Premier League Christmas shopping lists. Sid Lowe on the blower, on the road to Santander. Italy, the big countdown to Beckham's arrival. Drosden Chesterfield in the Cup, three replays in and still looking about as settled as the Gobi Desert. All that and a full roundup on all the weekend's Premier League delights in Football Weekly. Hello everybody, on board today, a very special lineup actually, and what is a valedictory performance from this soon-to-be decommissioned Pod Mark 2. Pod Mark 3 awaits, and I'm looking forward to that on Monday. But in the meantime, a little gleam of nostalgia in his dewy eye, Kevin McCarra.
It's a terrible day, but we'll get over it. Yes.
All right, and thanks for coming in, Kevin.
I didn't know you were a Blackburn fan.
Matt Scott,
we'll get to that.
you're well, are you, Matt?
I'm exceptionally well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Great to have you back, and Amy, great to have you back as well. And you're just saying your admiration for George Bush and his. His reflexes.
I thought, yes, he could play in goal, possibly, or
yeah. You're supposed to get in the way of cash thrown at you.
No, but he just looked quite agile with something coming.
I think it's American sports, it's baseball, isn't it? You sway away from the object that's going for your head, you know. So.
Yeah, well, unless you're Cristiano Ronaldo, in which case you probably just stick to it. But that was an attempt at topical humour. Let's just move on. No mumbling, please, says Hey Habib, because he has a loud bus journey. So let's enunciate. Okay, now, item one, I think, is probably Blackburn Rovers, is it? We'll be talking more about, you know, the Premier League and what awaits this weekend there. But let's just talk about what's happened since we last spoke, the Rovers. As you know, they're in a pit as bottomless as, say, Victoria Beckham. and they've decided that Big Sam is the answer man, who certainly will bring some bottom to their situation.
Well, Richard Dunn.
Yes. Richard Dunn, why?
You said he's going to bring some bottom to their
situation. Oh, has Richard Dunn got an especially big bottom?
Famously. Am I wrong?
That's correct.
Oh, right, there you go. There you go. Learn something new every day. Right, but anyway, but back to Big Sam. Now, Kevin, a good appointment?
I think it's good for Blackburn, but I wonder how he feels about this. You probably envisage your managerial career as an onward climb, onwards and upwards, which it was for Sam until, well, let's not mention Panorama, but... Even on the pitch, let's come to Panorama separately. But you know, going to Newcastle, yes, it's a disaster area, etc. But he, like everyone else, will have thought, yeah, it's a big club. I can go there and do this and raise my own profile and go on to another level. And now he's back to exactly where he was before, pretty much geographically as well. He's got, I think, not that bad a squad. Admittedly, since last season, Bentley, of course, went and Bentley has gone. And the squad's been...
Brad Friedel.
Brad Friedel.
But it's the, maybe look at the squad that's there. I'm not saying it's going to do as well as Blackburn did last season, but it's good enough to survive. But I just wonder how he feels in terms of motivation about getting back to all this again. It's not much different from what he was doing at Bolton all those years ago.
No, but I think he's probably just happy to get back into a Premier League job, no?
I'd agree with that, James. Mm. I think there's a lot of managers out there who don't know what to do with themselves when they're not actually working in football. It's what they've done from when they were, you know, a teenager. They were in the system, playing, having a career, then getting into management. And I think people struggle sometimes to have a happy life when they're so used to being in that. So I suspect he's probably... Also, I imagine his pride was very much dented by the Newcastle experience. And as you mentioned, he thought he was going onwards to bigger and better things. Mm. You know, the fact that he was supposedly a contender for the England job as well. And now you look at what Capello's done, and I suppose most English people who even advocated Allardyce being a possible manager would think, well, thank goodness, you know, I think the right thing has happened. But he's got to rebuild his self-esteem, and I'm sure his hunger is there. I'm interested to see what happens in terms of the squad. I mean, Blackburn last summer, they made money in the transfer market. They made about, I think, 8 million more or less, cashing in on some players and just kind of buying replacements that weren't things to turn your head.
No.
And now I expect Sam will want to bring in some players that he trusts and that have his kind of mentality. And the other thing on that I think is interesting is how the Blackburn fans feel about him. Yes, I'm sure they'll feel confident that Sam Allardyce would keep him up, but they're used to actually some quite attractive football at Ewood Park. I mean, Blackburn do have sometimes a bit of an unfair bad reputation, but they've played some good stuff, and I'm not sure how much they'll necessarily welcome a bit more of a direct style of play.
I think we should also say, of course, that he said it's all a misunderstanding. He didn't turn down Blackburn, you know, in the summer. But some people do have that impression that he didn't want to go there. So I think he's got work to do to get his own enthusiasm back up, and also to persuade the fans.
Well, I think the fans, as Amy says, they're probably the priority numero uno right now is winning, and if it's winning ugly, then by all means. And you got to figure that Stoke are in for a bruising encounter when you take Big Sam, the man who built Bolton into one of the hardest playing teams around, allied to a Blackburn side that has been the number one foulers in the league for some time now.
Yeah, but then Stoke are pretty hefty fellas and can look after themselves. I mean, the issue, obviously, I mean, you would expect them certainly to be on the end of a spanking in terms of the football, I would say, because that's what tends to happen when new managers come in.
Right.
You know, that's you always lay the opposition.
Do you reckon that Sam will come in and have an immediate impact like that?
I think just by virtue of it, I mean, if you'd taken over, James, I think that you'd have had an immediate positive effect, because they want to impress the new man. It's all about building the momentum, and as Amy says, you know, having the self-esteem, that you know, that's going to take time to build, but if he has that self-respect at the moment and wants to make an immediate impact and can build momentum in the land, then that's fine. But after his Cyrano de Bergerac act with Sunderland, I don't know how much he can retain his self-esteem, because, you know, I mean, that was just embarrassing. The number of back page leads and Sky Sports News strapline things about Sam Allardyce's peons to Sunderland, AFC Sunderland, was just like I say, embarrassing.
That appearance outside the stadium, like with the sandwich board.
Exactly.
I thought a step too far. But well, there you go. And the other question is, I mean, although the morale will be lifted, it is fair to say, and it's worth pointing out in Paul Ince's defence, that the materials he's going to have, even though it's not that vastly different a team, when you take away the players who he's lost to injury, like Duff and Reid,
sure, yeah,
when you look at the players who have disappeared, like Bentley and Friedel, and the fact that Santa Cruz no longer seems to know exactly where the goal is, how rescuable a situation is it?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the papers, one of the guys who knows Allardyce well, said the condition of his going there is that Santa Cruz does not leave in January.
Wouldn't it be better to sell him, cash in the 20 million, well, and get someone who will?
Yeah, but who can you get? I mean, where do you get a top quality forward in January? I mean, most teams in the Premier League would want one.
He'll be walking out of broken glass to get to Ewood Park, won't he?
Yeah. I mean, I think Chelsea would struggle to get a top quality forward in January, never mind Blackburn trying to replace Santa Cruz. So I think...
I think that it would be sensible, though, for that kind of story to be placed, that we don't want him to leave, because if you say the door's open for him to leave after you've had 12 and 14 million pound bids,
yeah,
you're only going to devalue a player who clearly isn't interested at Blackburn. So, you know, for the time being, if you want to retain the value of him, talk it up and say that we don't want him to go. I think that that's a cleverly placed story rather than necessarily an insight into Sam's thinking.
No, the person that wrote it does know pretty well. Oh, yeah, but I do believe Sam's, this job's very difficult, and I don't want to do it without a centre forward. So, all right, Santa Cruz goes, but not in January.
Amy, meanwhile, you were speaking this week to Tony Adams about the pressure that young English managers are under. This was after Paul had gotten the heave.
No, it was the day before, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
But I mean, I think that a lot of the points he was making were very relevant. And interestingly,
what was he saying?
Well, he thinks that there's a danger that we are going to lose an entire generation of young managers if we continue to treat everybody with such rash judgment and such high expectation. And he said that when you are a player and you've had a big career behind you, as he has, as Ince did, as Roy Keane did, as Zola did, etc., the spotlight on you when you start out in management is absolutely gigantic. And what's difficult is that there's so little time to actually put your point of view across,
isn't
as a
it
young
also,
manager.
Isn't it because of the kind of jobs you get given? Because you're a famous ex-player, you automatically get into a Premier League club, as Tony's done. I know he had Wickham before, but you can walk into that kind of a job, whereas otherwise, and that's where the expectations come in, that's where the spotlight comes
in. Exactly, because he was saying, look, you've got to learn, and there is no time to learn in the current
Premier League.
State
Why not
of football.
Take a job further down the?
Well, a lot of them, partly because a lot of them are desperate to work in an area where they know and feel comfortable.
Right.
I mean, it's actually quite difficult if you've spent your whole life at Arsenal to manage at Wickham, because you're dealing on a level you don't not understand, but you're not so familiar with.
Yeah. Amy, what do you reckon of Paul Linson? Because he did, in theory, the correct thing, manage two clubs.
I completely agree with that, Kevin. And I actually think when you look at his apprenticeship, it looks like a very solid
one. It does, yeah.
He did extremely well in two difficult jobs at Macclesfield and MK Dons. And you thought to yourself, I thought when the appointment was made by Blackburn, good for them. They've gone for someone who's gone about things the right way. But I had a chat last week or the week before with Nigel Winterburn, who was the defensive coach at Blackburn with Ince. And he said, The thing that astounded him more than anything is he'd sat down and he'd actually gone through all the fixtures and all the days that he'd worked with Blackburn. And he said, you won't believe how few days you actually get to sit and work with the players, because most weeks are either international weeks or you've got a midweek game. He said they'd had about five actual days since the start of the season to sit and get your point of view
across.
But
that's true of all managers. I mean, that's
what
you have to deal with.
When you're a new manager,
you have to start
something.
You have to do it sometime.
Sam will find the same thing, even though he's experienced, that Blackburn, how many real days has he got to get down to that squad and get his point of view across of how he wants to play, what he wants them to do?
Good managers, though, I mean, when I say good managers, managers with a real reputation refuse to take jobs in mid-season. They refuse to take jobs even before, you know, the pre-season, or even after the pre-season has ended. You know, you've got to have that determination to know, because it's all about building
for the
pre-season.
It's a nice idea, Matt, but I think, you know, people are so desperate to get jobs, you take what you're given. Roberto Di Matteo said last week that, you know, he took the MK Dons job when he took over from Paul Ince right at the end of July, and he had hardly any time to get his squad together. But, you know, what do? You get offered a job if you want to be in this profession. Those chances don't come around very often.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, MK Dons, I mean, you mentioned it was a difficult job at MK Dons, but they're very well funded, actually. I mean, for the level they were playing in, they did well in the transfer
market. But you've still got to have time to buy and sell your players.
But I think that Richard Bevan, the LMA, League Managers Association chief executive, has got a very good strategy with trying to get managers overseas. I think, you know, if you look at some of the apprenticeships that managers serve are so much in the spotlight if they are Paul Ince. You know, none of us had ever followed Macclesfield at all, but then when Paul Ince, you know, former England captain, walks through the door and becomes one of the only black managers in the country, suddenly the media spotlight's on him. You know, I think if they were to absent themselves, you know, you can go to the most outlandish places. Scolari and Wenger both managed in Japan, you know, that kind of thing. You're out of the way, you're able to do something that you are completely isolated, operating with players who don't speak your language. And I think that in the modern world, if you want to be a Premier League manager, it has a lot more, it's a lot less dislocated to the Premier League management career than it is in League One, League Two, where frankly it's a different sport.
Isn't the problem there that people from English football are regarded as being so tactically inept as indeed our friend Leander was pointing out on the subject of Bobby Robson, that it's hard for them to... They don't have much market, do they, English coaches abroad? Not since about 100 years ago, anyway.
Well, Tony Adams said that, you know, the best thing he did, really, in terms of his apprenticeship, was go to Holland,
right,
where he worked with the youth team in Feyenoord. And he said, you know, he as far as everybody saw him in that club, he was just a coach. They didn't care that he was a former player.
But that's what he still is, unfortunately. He's not a manager, Tony. I mean, that is Tony's flaw. Is you know, he was a great leader as a captain at Arsenal, but I don't think that he... I mean, he's probably a very, very good coach. I mean, Portsmouth, Harry sung his praises as a coach there, but I think...
Well, the question from Thicky at the back, what's the difference?
I beg your pardon?
What's the difference between a manager and a coach?
Because as a captain, he could do it unthinkingly. It was in his DNA.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very used to being a captain of a defensive team. As a manager, well, you're
being a coach and a manager.
Yeah. Well, as a coach, you're on the training ground. You're the player's mate. You're the person who's trying to keep them, you know, get them through their drills, stay on their side. But as a manager, you're more of an accountant. You've got, you know, you've got to have some idea of the... You're
it's
an executive.
It's like being sergeant major or being the general.
Yeah, yeah, it's more of a the brigadier. Right. It's more of a the CO. It's more of a sort of a general. I don't know. I haven't got a military background. I don't know what a CO does. What am I talking about?
But well, they kind of command.
But yeah, yeah, well, yeah, they've got to have. Yeah, I think they do. Yeah. The clue's in the name. But they have to have an idea about the business side of football, the contacts, and being able to have a real
CO's
strategic
don't have to
view.
Do any of that. They're more military based.
Right. I'm learning on the job here.
I mean, to get back to reality, people must make the step from being coaches to being managers. It's not impossible. The game wouldn't exist unless people were capable of going from being coaches to being managers. It is different, I know, but I don't understand why somebody with Tony Adams' personality shouldn't be able to embrace all the aspects of the job and deal with it.
That's the end of part one, sadly. Because Sid, we need to get on the phone to him because he's got to catch a plane to Racing Santander for all sorts of delights involving Crazy Mark Hughes and Man City.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Joining us now on the line from where? Barajas Airport, your favourite place in the world, Sid?
Yeah, my favourite place in the world, probably the only airport in the world that's named after a character from the A-Team as well.
Indeed, one who didn't like to fly as well.
Exactly.
That's bizarre.
Do they sell milk there?
I don't want no milk. You won't get me in no plane.
Sid, you're off to see the UEFA Cup tie between Racing Santander and Man City today.
I am, yeah. Big game, eh? City are already through, but it's really big for Racing because Racing have never been in the UEFA Cup before. This is the first ever chance that they've had to play in Europe, and they've been absolutely rubbish so far, two draws and a defeat. So they need to win to get through this group.
Now, we want to get your view on the reports that Real Madrid have bought themselves a new Diarra to replace the old Diarra.
Yeah, it hasn't gone through yet. We're still waiting for it to be absolutely confirmed. But of course, Portsmouth for Tony Adams last night looked like he was already spending the money. He was telling everybody how he was going to use it, how he hoped to use it. Because of course, Portsmouth have accepted the offer, but we're still waiting for it to go through absolutely formally.
All right, there's still talk of interest from Man City, but Real Madrid quite confident about this, are they?
Well, Real Madrid are confident, but I think there's a very slight risk, which is that Real Madrid are currently talking to Diarra about, obviously by the time this pod goes up, the chances are this will all be out of date, but Real Madrid are currently talking to Diarra about his wage demands. And Madrid have got a bit of previous on this, because during the summer, when they had Santi Cazorla and David Villa lined up, the reason they missed out on Cazorla is because at the last minute, basically, Fedja Matovic, the sporting director, you know those €2 million I was going to pay you a year? How about their €1 million? And his agent told Mijatovic where to stick it.
Yeah, interesting. So, okay, Tony Adams might wish to relax a little bit on his Christmas shopping list. Cristiano Ronaldo, another figure being linked heavily once again with Real Madrid.
Yeah, it just won't go away, will it, this one? I think that I'm very, very, very sceptical about the story that came out yesterday from the newspaper El Mundo. I thought there were four or five, maybe even six or seven points of the story where you thought, well, hang on a minute, that can't mean. And it seems to me there were so many points of doubt in the story that I think it needs to be treated with some scepticism. That's not to say that it's not true, of course, but it is to say that there's bits of it that don't ring true. Right. And also, it's also not to say that it's not entirely logical. I mean, when you look at the way things happened last summer, Cristiano Ronaldo very clear that he wanted to leave Manchester United and ended up staying. And it's difficult to believe that him staying wasn't in return for something. Now, obviously, we all know it was in return for a lot more money, but whether or not there was some sort of future deal, then, of course, time will tell on that.
Fair enough. All right, so, well, listen, it's the last weekend, I'm guessing, of the Liga before the end of the year, is it, this weekend?
Yeah, it is, yeah. They take a Christmas break, unlike in England.
What kind of thing do they do for Christmas? Is it holidays, or do they jet off and do training camps in Dubai, or what?
No, most of the players get a holiday. Most of the players are told that they can go home. What's interesting in Spain, really, over the Christmas break, is it's Christmas that they use to play the... what's the best word for this? The international games for the regions of Spain, for the historic regions of Spain, some of which, of course, believe that they're nations. So, for example, it's during Christmas that you'll get games where the Basque Country national team, for want of a better phrase, will play, where the national team of Catalonia, for want of a better phrase, will play, and so on. So it tends to be quite a sort of an interesting time from that point of view, although those are games that, in truth, are very important in their own regions, obviously, and then not important everywhere else. The other thing that always happens at Christmas, of course, is that the Brazilians magically miss their flights back home afterwards.
Yeah, indeed. Before that, you got the very real business of Barcelona taking on Villarreal, who just dropped out of the top four in the Liga, and Real Madrid, meanwhile, taking on, surprise for many people, second place as Valencia. Pep Guardiola's side, of course, have been blowing everybody away with kind of tennis scores. What do you foresee happening against Villarreal?
Well, Villarreal, over the last few years, are the side that have most caused Barcelona problems. And it's interesting because, obviously, we always look at Barcelona and say, well, the kind of teams that tend to get results against them are the teams that do, to some extent, what Real Madrid did last weekend. Go and defend very deep, play very aggressively, kick Leo Messi up in the air and you know, try and defend themselves. But Villarreal, interestingly, have got results against Barcelona over the last few years by doing quite the reverse, by taking the ball off Barcelona and playing themselves and maintaining possession and not allowing Barcelona near it, and almost playing Barcelona at their own game, although I think they don't have quite the same pace about their game that Barcelona have, but they certainly have that same obsession with maintaining possession. So it could be really interesting. That said, Villarreal are playing really badly at the moment. The defence has completely and utterly collapsed. They've just stopped getting results altogether. So you'd have to say that Barcelona are favourites, but it is at Villarreal, and as I say, it's a place where Barcelona have tended to lose over the last few years.
Right, and Real Madrid at home to Valencia?
Yeah, and that could be, that. I mean, it's obviously for lots and lots of reasons, that's going to be really big. Obviously, for Juan de Ramos, it's the chance to get off to a decent start in the league, because last week's game against Barcelona was always kind of considered a game apart to some extent. I mean, I think we saw that with a reaction from Madrid that they lost to Barcelona, and everyone said, well, that's kind of all right, which is a bit weird, really. For Valencia, I think it's an opportunity to not just to maintain second place, but I think more than that, because it's not really about the points, although they matter, of course. It's about proving that they're genuinely a good side, because despite being second, Valencia have actually shown some signs this year of not being all that brilliant. Defensively, particularly at home, they've been pretty poor.
Oh, interesting. Nice one, Sid. Listen, what have you got planned for Christmas yourself?
I'm going to be in Spain until Boxing Day and then in London for about 4 or 5 days.
I'm hearing talk that you might be joining us in your official Football Weekly spandex outfit on the 29th of December. Is that right?
There are rumours. I believe we're in negotiations at the moment.
Wow. Wow, that's something special to look out for, eh, listeners? Sid Lowe in the pod. In the pod. My word. Well, listen, have a super Christmas then. Do you want to leave us with a little phrase of the week, perhaps a little seasonal one?
Oh, a seasonal one. Well, I'll just say Happy Christmas in Spanish.
Feliz Navidad. We all know Feliz Navidad. There was that song and that. Come on, step up, Sid.
That's a song, by the way, that Iberia on their flights always play in the last 10 minutes as you're about to touch down. I assume they think that they're calming you down.
No, I think the idea is if you crash, it'll be like, oh, well, fair enough.
Why would they do that at Easter?
Exactly. On your way down, you think, Christ, crash, crash, crash. I've had enough
of
this.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrific.
How do you say what lovely socks, Auntie? No, I don't know. There must be some traditional Spanish Christmas phrase.
Well, maybe the one to go for, if we're going to talk about presents then, is Reyes, which just means kings, and that's when the Spanish kids get their presents, because they don't get on the Christmas day that we get them. They get on January the 6th, which, of course, is the day, theoretically, that the three kings arrived.
Well, it is the day that Arsenal signed Jose Antonio Reyes, I think, and what a disaster that turned out to be.
How about that? That was a pretty crap gift, was it? Nearly as bad as giving someone some myrrh, whatever myrrh is. Gold frankincense, I can understand. What the hell's myrrh?
Well, it's the business with the tomb, of course, as you're probably all too aware. Listen, Sid, I am a little bit confused. Because I'm sure our many listeners around the world can clear this one up. So you're saying that the 6th of January is the King's Day. See, in Italy, that's La Befana, which is when the old witch comes, and that's when kids in Italy traditionally would receive their stockings with a little lump of coal and a satsuma, but also nowadays lots of gifts and stuff and sweets.
Well, you'd be pretty pissed off if you woke up with a little lump of coal in your stocking, wouldn't you?
Well, depends in which region of the world you live. Tell you what,
right,
can be handy on January the 6th. Sid, I'll let you go then. Thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to seeing you on the 29th of December.
Yeah, quality, good stuff. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, Sid.
All right.
Speaking of Italy, of course, we mentioned the arrival of an old witch on a broom. Next item, Victoria Beckham.
Nancy Dell'Olio.
No. Okay. Anyway, well, listen, the Beckhams arrive on Saturday in Milan, and it will be live. It will be televised. His presentation at the San Siro. They're not actually playing on Saturday. They play on Sunday, but they're still going to wheel him out in front of all the onlookers and the curiosity seekers, amongst whom, presumably, will be Marco Borriello, the
Milan forward, who you might have seen his quote this week, that he's looking forward to checking out, in his words, David's package, because to see if he really is as prodigiously endowed as those underwear adverts suggest. But it is sowing confusion, Beckham's arrival there, because I think initially when the whole deal was done, that everyone thought, well, a lot of people were hoping that Beckham would maybe stick around for at least the end of the season, and now Milan seem to have come to terms with the fact that it is going to be a month and a half or two, and it just does seem a bit strange. Gattuso certainly making remarks to that end. The big question, will he play?
Well, that's what I was going to say, James. Yeah. If he does play, who will he play instead of?
Well, there's no real equivalent for the wide right midfielder in the Milan lineup, and they are having a bit of an injury crisis at the moment, Milan, because Seedorf's injured and playing but is injured, and Gattuso's out for 6 months, and in fact they're busy looking around for a replacement at the moment. They've been making inquiries for Palombo of Sampdoria and Matteo Brighi. What a cracking goal there by Gambosaka, who are currently enjoying a ding dong 5-3 semi-final in the World Club Cup on a monitor over there. But anyway, sorry, they had a pop at Matteo Brighi, but no dice there. But yes, they do need another midfielder. They don't seem to think that Beckham is that midfielder. So it doesn't.
Haven't they seen him tackle?
Indeed. No, but it doesn't speak volumes for his chances of playing if they've got an injury crisis in midfield, and even with him arriving, they're out looking for another midfielder. They obviously don't think that he's the man to fill that hole.
Sorry. Go on, Kevin. It looks really difficult for him, doesn't it, Beckham? Mm. I mean, he's not played for a while. Mm. He's going to a higher level in Serie A, and he's joining a team that are not all that great at that age. I think it's he will struggle to make any impact there.
Mm. Well, indeed. There were a lot of rumours about his wife's demands, that she apparently had a long shopping list of what she expected, which included an indoor Olympic-sized pool, an Italian Olympic champion to teach her kids ice skating, a chopper on call 24 hours a day. This is reporting the press. I have no idea if any of this corresponded to the truth, because now apparently they haven't even sorted out, or at least they're publicly saying they still don't know where the Beckhams are going to stay, because he's then going to be jetting off. He can't play until obviously January, but he's going to be jetting off with the team to Dubai after Christmas, I think on the 29th, and while Beckham, Madam Beckham, and the kids will be there, staying somewhere in Milan. Nobody's quite sure where. So it's, yeah.
What's the story was, and excitedly written on page 3 of The Sun, that he was going to be near the red light district in Milan.
Really?
Yeah, apparently. I don't know how. Well, evidently that story passed with little impact apart from to me. But
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. Yeah, nobody seems to know.
James, how many people are likely to turn up to the San Siro for this?
Well, they had a big turnout for Ronaldinho's presentation at the start of the season, but on a cold December night, I don't know. At the same time, you know, the Italians love their celebrity culture, all that the VIPs, as they call them, and there will be a lot of curiosity about. I mean, that's why they're putting it out live on telly. But I don't think they'll have a big number. I mean, maybe, what do you think, 6,000, something like that?
So do they always do this for their loan signings?
No, you were asking about Philippe Senderos.
He'll be here for 6 weeks.
I was building up to that.
There might be a big crowd for the day Senderos leaves. a poor chap is out injured again. Ronaldes is saying, who checks the Facebook group for quotes? I've not heard anything read from it so far. You're absolutely right, Ronaldes. There is a hive of activity going on under that particular rock, and we will be lifting it and poking around in it in future weeks. If you like posting and that kind of stuff, don't forget, of course, that my usual go-to place is obviously the Guardian website itself, on which, from next Monday, I think I'm right in saying, Producer Pete, you can check out that extraordinary Life in the Day documentary affair, which we produced. Was it last Monday when somebody stuck a camera in and filmed us doing the pod? It's nothing glamorous. They stuck a camera in, they filmed us. Some bits of it will be up. There is one or two little bits, vignettes that we've done, or a little couple of questions and answers to... A little bit of video content. Nothing exciting, though. It's actually really good, says Producer Pete, who's seen it. And it is really exciting. And, you know, cancel Christmas and get that in. Right, FA Cup, Drosden, Chesterfield. I'm going to mention this before we get on to part three, just because we should mention it. Drosden, the Bloods, excitingly enough. Chesterfield, the Spireites, as non-league football fans like myself are well aware. They were playing.
You don't have to be a non-league fan to know that, because they did reach the semi-final of the FA Cup years ago, didn't they? So, and Joe Guest was the most famous Arsenal / Chesterfield fan ever to hit page 3.
Wow. Good knowledge, Matt Scott. So now there they were. They were playing in the FA Cup second round.
That's
right?
Two references to the Sun's page three in one podcast.
Just right.
Yeah, they're going to be right. Writing that
we's,
down, aren't
we've
they?
Still got part three to go as well. I want to see if we can
don't
break the record.
Don't tell my wife.
Now, okay. Now they were playing in the second round, right? The first time, Drawsden were winning and it got called off for fog. Yeah. Mm. So then they met again.
Floodlight failure.
Yeah. No, no. The second time, what happened was that Chesterfield scored that naughty goal when they were supposed just to hand the ball back, and instead the Chesterfield striker aimed a lob over the Drawsden keeper's head, scored. And then there was all sorts of to-do on the sideline. And apparently, then, we discovered afterwards, that the Chesterfield chairman came down and told his players, you have to let them equalise. There's no way that Chesterfield are going through, even though we'll get a big windfall for going through to the third round, maybe getting a Premier League club. There's no way we're going through with this stain on our club's honour. So you go through and you let them score. And they did. And he also insisted that the player go through to the Drawsden locker room after the game and apologise, which apparently he did. Apparently he just went in and went, sorry, lads, goal bonus. Apparently that was his.
has anybody seen the goal where they were allowed to score?
Oh yeah, have you seen it?
No.
It was on.
Did they all just stand aside?
It was on the Friday football show on Satanta, brilliantly, in which Jason McAteer, who knows one of the players involved, was explaining all this, and he said, first of all, Chesterfield's goal was a brilliant chip of the keeper. I mean, it looked not unlike he was actually just trying to kick it back to the keeper, but he sails over his head and apparently did mean to do it, according to Jason McAteer. And then, they basically just stand by and the guy kind of strolls the ball into the net. Now what happened is that they played a third time and Chesterfield were 2-0 up this time with 18 minutes to go and the floodlights failed. So now they've got to replay the whole thing. Now Chesterfield are saying, listen, when we scored a dodgy goal against you, we let you come back and score, and that was very sporting of us. You have to do the same now, Drawsden. You have to let us score two goals, because if we go back to 0-0 and we were on the 4-3 play of this, we're not going to get through against you. Anyway, that's all very exciting then, and in a second or two we'll have a look at the weekend in the Premier League in part three.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Here it is then, part three. With your heads up on all the big games this weekend in the Barclays Premier League. Amy, Arsenal-Liverpool's game is exciting you. Also, Kevin's going to be there, aren't you?
I'm indeed, yes.
Yeah, and Liverpool, is this where they get found out?
Liverpool?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we were chatting among ourselves earlier about Arsenal's many problems, such as the team not being all that good these days compared to the standard we've come to expect. I was thinking for a while, well, they'll finish fourth, and maybe they will, because Aston Villa aren't all that great. And Andy saw Aston Villa last night with their B team against Hamburg being destroyed, but Olic and Petric will know the limitations. But I wonder if Arsenal really are any better than that.
Than Villa's B team?
No. I mean, is their overall squad better than Aston Villa's? I think they too lack any great depth, and even the first team's not all that brilliant. But It's a strange situation for Arsenal, because you get the impression of even Wenger kind of losing the plot. The Gallas situation has been a disaster for Arsenal. He has not somehow been matured and helped him be made captain, had to be taken off him, and now we hear he's going to leave. This has been a really bad spell for Arsenal. There are external difficulties for other clubs spending money and problems of perhaps the Arsenal ownership changing hands in the future. But I also think that this has not been Wenger's finest hour either.
The thing is, though, I mean, Arsenal's problems are there for everyone to see. Mm. Liverpool's problems have been to an extent masked by the fact that everybody else at the top of the table has been dropping points, and therefore they've been allowed to stay in first place. And Rafa can go, yes, but we're top. Mm. I do wonder, though, if the situation with Keane and one or two other issues, the fact that the fullbacks don't seem to be much cop, etc., are going to come to a head at the Emirates, and Arsenal maybe pull one of their top draw performances out of the bag.
Well, I was just listening to Kevin outlining Arsenal's many multitude of problems and thinking to myself, well, there you go then, it's all perfectly set up for an Arsenal win.
Yeah, but they have won big games, that's not the problem. They won at Chelsea and so on, you know.
Well, that's the point about Arsenal, that even if they do beat Liverpool, and actually Liverpool have a pretty ropey record away from home at Arsenal. I was struggling beforehand to remember the last
February 2000.
Oh, there you go. Well,
they haven't won at Arsenal.
But I mean, they've quite often in recent years not only lost or games at Arsenal, but they've actually performed really poorly in quite a lot of games down there. And, you know, it's a funny thing about football where certain clubs do have certain grounds where they just never quite can turn it on, and other grounds where they're always particularly strong. I think Liverpool really need to
need that advantage away, though, didn't they?
Well, that's what I was going to say. All Liverpool need to do is take a look at Arsenal's home matches recently against Hull, Aston Villa, etc., etc., and they really should go with a fair degree of confidence.
Excellent. All right. Meantime, Everton are hosting Chelsea, who have that 100% record away. Alex wants to leave. Minor fly in the ointment. There's always the odd kind of bit of unrest at Chelsea. And Raphael Honigstein was talking about this, the fact that we shouldn't get too excited about the talk of factions, etc. there. Perhaps rather more importantly, Spartak Moscow's players have revealed that the canteen at Cobham, the Chelsea training ground, is really rubbish. The food's really poor, they use disposable plates, and the chairs look like something off a skip, I think they said.
Yeah, but that's exactly how it was at Arlington before. They are used to that.
Don't you find that quite heartening that these millionaires have been made to sit in bad chairs? Well, I think it's good for them.
And pay for their own lunches.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I should mention that Spartak's players were there training for their clash with the Spurs in the UEFA Cup. Mm. And they've obviously gone for one of those kind of Spartan kind of training.
Is that what Spartak means?
Probably, it probably is, yeah. Anyway, there you go. Now, we're Chelsea, Everton, the Toffees for the current chance for a surprise.
Well, I'm going to it, some aspect. Ah, I suppose I should say.
That's Monday, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I know, but I'm still going to it nonetheless, right. Even on Mondays. Right. Yeah, this might be where Chelsea's away record does struggle a bit, I think.
Right.
I've got a lot of regard for David Moyes, and I think they may not score, they will not score, I would say, as freely as they have done in other away games.
Really? Well, you don't think, you think Joleon Lescott's got Drogba's number, do you?
No, I just think that you underestimate David Moyes. I think his record's fantastic.
Yeah, but David Moyes isn't shoring up the back four, is
no,
he?
No, I mean, but he picks a team, and last week they won, 1-0 away. So,
what about
that was in the 98th minute, though.
That's allowed, apparently.
Okay, alright, Sarky.
What about up front, though? It's just Tim Cahill.
No, basically, I do think Arsenal can make this. Arsenal, God, I do believe Everton can make this extremely tight. I think it's in their nature, and that Chelsea will not be able to play the free-flowing counter-attacking football they've enjoyed at other grounds.
Right. Okay. What about the teams at the bottom? You've got Blackburn taking on Stoke. We talked about that a bit. We're expecting a big Sam bounce back style thing. Hull are hosting Sunderland, who certainly had a major reaction to losing Roy Keane last week. Was it 4-0 or something? They won.
Yeah, which does show you why they weren't too excited at Sam's overtures, to be honest. I think Ricky Bradshaw's proving to be a really good choice as a caretaker manager, and I think that's why they're taking their time over it, and he could well get the job permanently.
Well, that'd be nice. West Brom, meanwhile, who are on the bottom, and I think already, 6 points, is it? Or something more than that from safety? They're hosting Man City, who only have their goal difference to thank for keeping them out of the relegation zone. Anything that catches your eye in those three games?
You do wonder at Mark Hughes, don't you, as time goes on? And I think that's a real shame if he's in the difficulties at Man City. But it's not so much wealth as the possibility of imminent wealth, isn't it?
You know,
as time goes on, but there's this kind of expectation about the club that he didn't experience when he was at Blackburn.
Surely by now they would have to. He's there for the January transfer window. They would have had to have already got somebody else in by now, no?
Oh yeah, I just wonder. Even then, are they going to give him a lot of money to spend in January if they're not sure about keeping him? I hope he does stay, because I think he's proved in the past he's a really promising manager.
Well, Kevin, they might just do what a lot of other clubs have been doing lately, which is buy players that they want rather than players that the manager wants.
And who's telling them who to buy? It's the other thing, isn't it? Who's whispering in the owner's ear to suggest? That's the other question.
The thing about the Manchester City is that they should have the manager that they used to have is perfect for that role, and Mark Hughes isn't. Sven Göran Eriksson, come back. You know, you're not having a great time in Mexico. Go back to Eastlands and be the manager of Galacticos that Manchester City will need when they're compiling this this team of superstars that they keep telling us they want to.
Now, Aston Villa, meantime, are going to be at West Ham. That's an interesting game there. West Ham, who've suddenly become solid and gritty and tight at the back, etc. Under the solid and gritty and tight at the back, Gianfranco Zola. And I'm not seeing a huge amount of enthusiasm for discussing that.
I'm going to it, so I'll generate some enthusiasm.
Amy, let's hear about that then. What caught your eye about that fixture?
Well, I think obviously Villa are interesting at the moment, and as Kevin said, you know, that UEFA Cup game that he watched, you don't really need to take a great deal of notice of that, because Martin O'Neill clearly didn't take a great deal of notice of it. But his first choice 11 is refreshing to watch, and I think he's justifiably quite proud that he says, did he say they've got 5 potential England starters or something at the moment that he said in the week? I mean, they really look what I like about watching Villa is they've got that sort of real freshness of a team that isn't used to going places, that feel like they're going places. They're on that kind of crest of a wave, enthusiasm, and it'll be interesting to see how far that takes them. But they've got obviously fantastic spirit. I mean, Kevin was talking about Everton just before, and David Moyes and not giving away goals, but that game against Villa, which was the sensational sort of late finale, that was just free-flowing attacking football all the way through, and Villa were resilient enough to think they'd lost the 3 points, and then they snatched them right back at the end. So you would expect Villa to go to West Ham really looking for the win.
That brings us to the end of this particular pod. I should just point out, in case anyone was worried, that this particular pod won't be around, but from Monday we'll be in a brand new one, because the Guardian's shifting offices, from which we'll be blasting off to a different satellite station. And but many thanks for being here today, Kevin McCara.
Thank you.
Matt Scott.
Thank you.
You went to the wrong blast off place.
Didn't I? Yeah.
You made it in the end. Yes, and Amy, mentally. Thank you so much, Amy, for coming by.
Cheers,
producer
James.
Pete, outstanding work. Sid there in Spain, you there at home. And be with us on Monday as we do our special pre-Crimble pod thing. Bye for now, eh?